This episode of Humans of Email is sponsored by AWeber, a tool for newsletters, landing pages, AMP emails, and more. Available for free at aweber.com/humansofemail. Start your next idea with AWeber.
And we're back. Did you miss us?
I missed us. I missed you. I missed you.
Aw, I missed you too. So if you've been listening consistently, you may have noticed that we did bonus episodes for a couple of weeks. Life got a little busy for us, so we needed a break, but we wanted to keep you entertained with some really awesome interviews that we did. And those were, they were fun. I really did enjoy the bonus episodes. But one of the things that got us busy was I'm busted. Busted, Natalie. I've got a pinched nerve, and it's so much worse than I could imagine.
I knew you were in trouble when you said that you were screaming in pain. I was like, that's not generally something that people want to hear from people they care about.
Yeah. So it's been a few weeks, and my next step is to get an epidural. And they're like, Jen, you probably won't need surgery.
I've had two epidurals, and the after effects are great. But I'm terrified of needles, and so that's definitely colored my experience. And that needle, Jen, that needle is not, that is not a joke of a needle. That is not like a little tiny baby, I'm going to hit this nice little vein in your arm needle. That is like a, oh my God, you're putting that where needle?
I don't want to see it. Oh, well, you know what I forgot to mention is Tommy's in the studio. Hello.
Yeah, I am. Yeah, and I just wanted to say, if we're talking about needles, I just had 1600 milliliters of liquid drained off my heart, and it was an 8-inch needle they jammed in my side to do so. Actually, the truth is I didn't feel a thing. They novocained around it. I was totally wrapped up. I mean, I was awake for the procedure, but it wasn't as bad as an epidural, that's for sure.
So I have two things in my life that I like have zero tolerance for. One is spiders. I love snakes, but I cannot with spiders. The other is needles. And can I tell you too, like, how awful it is to have a needle phobia and then like go through a pandemic where every news story on your news feed is like a picture of a needle in someone's arm? Yeah. I'm like, this is really upsetting to me.
Aw, well, I'm sad that you're scared of spiders because I kind of love them.
Do you really? Oh, man. Yeah. I will take a snake all day, any day. Snakes are cool, but like spiders.
I like snakes too.
I like spiders. The spiders with the crawling and the. I had like a situation one time where I put like one of those flowers behind my ear and a spider crawled out of it. It was like a really big, like palm sized spider. And I've never been the same.
That would freak me out. A little unexpected spider can be unnerving.
I'm sure it wasn't a palm sized spider. Let's
In my
it.
Mind, it was.
Oh, yeah, of course it was.
I've got a little sunroom that attracts a lot of spiders, and I name them. And I have like a little bug app, and I learned to identify them. And I had my favorite was she sat right next to me on the windowsill, and she'd watch Netflix with me. Her name was Sigourney Orb Weaver.
Boy, don't bump. I love it. I love
That's
it.
Amazing.
And I miss her terribly. R.I.P. Sigourney. But. Some of the other things I wanted to touch on, really important stuff here. I got a really bad haircut.
What?
But, you know, no one can see it on this podcast.
But, Natalie, you saw it. When we had our interview with Gilda, it was the day after I got it. And I'm like, I really don't like this haircut. And you're both like, well, we can't really see it. Take off your headphones and show us. And what happened, Natalie? What happened?
Oh, they gave you the Karen. They gave you the, I think you said it best, the Kate plus eight. The like, they gave you the Kate plus eight.
They gave me that weird stacked angled bob saying that me doing like a plain one length bob just wasn't, I don't know, sexy enough or what was the word?
Edgy.
Edgy. Edgy.
You have to be edgy.
That's not edgy. And so without my consent, it gave me the Karen. And okay, is the definition of irony going back to the salon to complain about your haircut because it makes you look too much like a Karen?
You show up and you're like, I have to talk to the manager. And they're like, of course you do.
So like, that's about to happen.
You know, the sad part is you are in like the precipice, the most beautiful place where for hair is like Atlanta. Like there is some of the most amazing places, salons in Atlanta to get it done. Now, granted, you're going to pay really, really big bucks for it.
This was $120.
Yeah, you should have gotten exactly what you wanted and not worried about being them worried about being edgy. You know what I'm saying? I mean, that's not their job to worry about.
And it's not edgy to have the official haircut of soccer moms of 2008.
Hold on. I'm a soccer mom.
But it's not 2008.
No, that's true. I don't have an edgy 2008 haircut. It's the Kate and it's the, what was that? Kate plus eight?
Kate Gosling.
You know the show I'm talking about.
Yeah, Kate Gosling.
Kate Gosling.
Wow.
Where is she today? Speaking of mothers.
Where's her hairstyle today? I know.
It's on Jen. Yeah. But
it's right here.
We have a mother related topic to talk about today.
Yeah. Speaking of mothers.
As my uncle used to say, happy Mother's Day, everybody. And remember, mother's only half a word.
Oh.
Yeah. Terrible. Terrible. But here's what I'll say. You know, when I saw this, I don't mind if you guys want to introduce this, but I definitely want to tell you how you've got me now thinking about email marketing on a regular basis, like all the time now.
Doing my little bounce segment,
every email I get, I'm like, oh, the girls wouldn't have liked this. I know they wouldn't have. Jesus.
Yeah, so you forwarded me an email and you wrote, so I want to have a conversation with you two about this email at some point. And I was like, oh, yes, I love this topic. Let us discuss it. So Tommy, take it away.
Well, and then the best part was is that you said that you were actually interviewed by the Washington Post for it, which is like doubly awesome because I was like, good. Not only am I like on the like hitting something that's topical, but apparently I'm not the only one that's noticing this. But I got an email from a company called Sunday, which for those of you who don't know, it's a lawn care company. And I don't really, I mean, I subscribe, but I get one every quarter from them, whatever. I'm not a customer of theirs. I'm a potential customer somewhere down the road from them. And they sent me an email that said, if you would like, we know that Mother's Day could be tough for you. If you would like to pause, or it can be tough for some or difficult time for many. If you'd like to be excluded from emails about this holiday, please tap here. And now let me explain a little bit about who I am. Okay. So my wife and I are married, but we don't have any kids. We have four-legged animals and I have occasionally in the past given my wife a Mother's Day card from the dog. My mom passed away very young. I was 27 years of age. So we're going back 20 years now. And I don't necessarily love Mother's Day. I don't think I would have ever chose to opt out of a Mother's Day email. But I definitely understand how some people could be really bothered by that. Perhaps you're trying to become a mother or whatever, and you're having trouble that this could be something crazy. But to me, it was like, okay, so what's next? Where does this go from here? And that's what I wanted to kind of get a feeling from you guys is what your opinion on this was and how much are we saying, hey, I know you don't like Sundays, but that's the name of our company. So we're just going to change it for you to Monday. I mean, that's or Friday or whatever. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know where the lines to be drawn. So please take it away from me and discuss.
Is this the first time you saw an email asking you if you wanted to opt out of Mother's Day promotions?
Yes.
Okay. So this is something that started around 2019. There was a flower company in the UK that sent out an email that said, hey, Mother's Day could be difficult for some of you. If you'd like to opt out, you know, click here. And Mother's Day and Flower Company, that makes a lot of sense, right? And I have heard secondhand, not firsthand, because I don't know anyone at that brand, but I heard secondhand that the idea was rooted in complaints that they got from their customers who were saying like, hey, Mother's Day is hard on me. I do not want Mother's Day emails. You send me a ton of Mother's Day emails. It makes me feel bad because for whatever reason, I've got bad relationship with my mother. I have a bad relationship with my daughter. I have lost a child. I can't conceive a child. I lost a parent. Whatever the reason is, you know, there are people who felt very sensitive. And so they decided to address that. When that email came out, the email industry went bananas. Like, this is amazing because we throw around the word empathy a lot. You need to be empathetic to your audience. your subscribers need to, you know, understand that you care about them. And we were like, this is an innovative idea to give someone an opportunity to opt out of a promotion. And we've been pushing this empathy idea. And here it is. Here's an amazing example of this. And there's literally a picture of me at giving a keynote in Prague in 2019 with this email on a giant screen behind my head. And I'm like, look at this great example of empathy in email. So it has become more widespread, this strategy. And I'm completely complicit in it being widespread. My point was, let us be inspired by this example of empathy, not let us copy and do this. Now, does this make sense for a lawn care company?
I don't think so. But I mean, maybe my lawn makes me think of my mom.
You know, I mean, I think, Jen, I think like this is something you see in marketing in other places too, like social media. Great example, like one company or two companies are like, you know what we're going to do a 4th of July social post. And then suddenly everybody's like, oh my gosh, we all have to do a 4th of July social media post. And it's like, but mm-hmm. do you know? And I think it comes back to the core question that I feel like you're asking, which is like, am I adding any value to anybody? I mean, I think you're right. Like if it's florals, if your key business, like if you have a great sales day on Mother's Day, because that's your line of business, then like, yeah, okay, that makes sense. But a lawn company, I mean, that's like, does Bissell do an opt out of Mother's Day? You
know what I'm saying? Well, like, I mean, here's the thing though. If you wanted to like say, well, the people are all, you know, old school, you know, 60, 70, 80 plus crowd. And you said Bissell does a Mother's Day thing because, you know, women should be cleaning. I mean, here's the thing. Obviously that is not my opinion. Okay. Right. I do not agree with that, but at least that almost makes sense as opposed to a lawn care company, which if you go back to the old school stereotypes would be the man's job.
Yeah. Well, it's one of those things where like, someone did it and then some other people did it, but they had like valid business reasons for it. And then Everybody was like, oh, shoot, if we don't do it, we look insensitive. And so then it became less a question of does it fit our strategy and more, oh, my gosh, we've got to do something or people will think we're insensitive rather than like, you know, just saying, hey, that doesn't really apply to our business model. I don't think it's something we need to take into consideration. I think it's the same thing with like these social media posts. Like, well, you didn't post on the 4th of July. What are you not patriotic? You don't love your country. You know what I'm saying? So it's just like these things, I think, spiral out of control when you get into marketing trends because people are afraid to say like, no, it doesn't make sense for my business model. I'm not going to do that.
Well, the bigger problem I have with it is now that it's become trendy and I'm getting more and more and more of these messages. And I'm someone who has a very strained relationship with my parents. And so I am one of those people who is a little bit sensitive, but like Mother's Day is a thing that I can't be insulated from, right? I'm going to see promotions regardless. And I'm used to that. It doesn't get me upset. But the first time I saw a message that said, hey, do you want to opt out? My thought was, you care about someone like me. And then the second, third, fourth, 20th time I saw that, I thought, I don't need to be reminded this many times that I don't have a great relationship right now with my parents. You are sticking a dagger in and twisting it every time I get one of these emails. So I can overlook a whole inbox full of Mother's Day promotions. They don't bother me. And, you know, a handful of brands suppressing is not going to insulate me from all the other promotions. They're a fact of life. They're happening, right? This Hallmark holiday is just something you cannot hide from. And I'm okay with that. But it's like every time I see a message that says, we understand this day can be difficult. What I'm hearing is, hey, Jen, you still no contact with your family? How's that going? Is it terrible?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. You know, to me, it seems like this, and I've heard you guys talk a lot about, you know, over the course of questions that we've answered in the bounce and through your episodes of the show, that it seems like the people who do this with the person, the end user in mind is great. When the people who do this because it helps their business is when this gets bad. And I'm not just saying in terms of this, but in terms of a lot of things with email, like the first people to do it that are doing it with the good reason in mind, it's great because they're thinking about the customer, but or the client or whoever. But the then when everybody else jumps on board, they're thinking of their own business before they're thinking of the customer.
So many email strategies live in service to the business rather than the recipient. And it's like, it's amazing. I say that as somebody who's in B2Bs where it's like even more so, right? But like a lot of email strategies are what is the business need first? And then, oh, how are the people who receive this going to feel about it? Is it going to do anything for them? Or are we just sending this because like we want to send it? Yeah, I think that's such an important point. And like, I will say, because we talked about birthday emails earlier in the season, I think I got more would you like to opt out of Mother's Day emails than I got birthday offers. And by wow. God, I want my birthday offers back in my inbox.
It was really cool, though, to be quoted in the Washington Post on this. That was exciting. That's my first time being in a major news outlet like that. So that's a big deal that I'm really cool. proud of that. And I have to give a shout out to a gentleman named Tubish Bamani. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but he is a brilliant strategist at an agency called Mastrat Digital. And he was actually initially interviewed by the Washington Post, and he has the same point of view that the three of us are expressing. And he saw I have a Twitter thread about this topic that I posted on April 1st, actually. And I made a graphic that said, please stop asking me to opt out of Mother's Day emails. And he told this Washington Post journalist about this Twitter thread, and he introduced me to her. And so, and his quote in the article is so much more eloquent than mine, but it's basically me going, yeah, what he said.
But you know what's interesting? You don't see opt out of Father's Day emails, do you?
I've seen it a couple times.
Have you? I was going to say, I don't know that I've ever seen an opt out of Father's Day emails. We could go down a rabbit hole on the expectations of women and mothers, but I'm not going to open that can of worms today.
I'll be interested to see as we start to get closer to Indigenous Peoples Day, which used to be Columbus Day, how that's going to work email wise, especially with, you know, oh, my company didn't celebrate Indigenous Peoples Day. They obviously don't care about Indigenous people kind of thing, going to that next level. And again, my question is, where does it stop? And that's what I would really like to know from you ladies.
I think there's always going to be, I mean, people love to, I shouldn't say love to, I think it's probably the opposite. People are afraid to not be on a trend and, you know, look bad by not, I mean, this goes back to like middle school, like, oh, you don't have that striped shirt from Abercrombie and Fitch, you don't fit in, right? Like it's the same reaction that I think a lot of marketers are having, which is like, oh, if I don't do that, then I won't fit in and we won't, you know, get the same, we won't be looked at as like a normal member of society, right? I mean, at some point you got to be brave enough to stop and say like, you know what? That striped shirt from Abercrombie and Fitch does not look good on me. I don't think I do want to wear it.
Times are changing so fast right now. And the way that we look at even recent history is through a completely different lens. It's like if you watch Friends, it's kind of cringy now, but it was completely mainstream and normal 20 years ago. And that's how Columbus Day is now, right? Mm-hmm. It kind of sucks. Mm-hmm. We didn't know that 20 years ago. That was not a widespread point of view. So times are changing and we should be changing. And I'm not saying that we should not allow people to opt out of Mother's Day or Father's Day or any other holiday that might be painful for any reason whatsoever. You just don't have to put it right front and center in our face every spring. I do not need 50 email messages asking me if I want to opt out. You need to have some kind of a preference gathering strategy, a progressive profiling, some other way of capturing that preference, right? It can be part of onboarding. It could be a standalone update your preferences campaign each year. Like you can do this a gazillion different ways if you are creative and you make it more subtle. Do not put the whole, you know, does your Mother's Day suck click here to opt out. Like, you don't have to word it that way. Like, this was an innovative idea in 2019. It's no longer innovative. If everybody does the same thing, it stops working in the way that it was intended. It's like there was a blog article 15 years ago that said, the best time to send email marketing is 10 a.m. on Tuesdays. And everyone's like, oh, I've got to send my email at 10 a.m. on Tuesdays. Well, what happens if all the email goes out at 10 a.m. on Tuesdays?
So true. And, you know, I love the idea of like a preference center, because there's probably other situations where a person might want to control. Like, you know, if your brand, for example, is a clothing brand and you have different, you know, types of clothing, like there may be some that I don't want. I don't care about men's ties. I don't need to see men's ties. If you sell men's ties, give me an option to say, I'm not interested. Similarly, like maybe I want to opt out of Black Friday emails. Maybe I'm not interested in your Black Friday offer. Although, that's a whole nother topic we should get to next season, because I also feel like I get an awful lot of Black Friday emails that have zero value. They're just like, it's a Black Friday sale where nothing's on sale. I'm like, then it's not a sale.
Yeah, the other thing is you could kill Black Friday. Like, I mean, I think that I get so many emails ramping up to Black Friday that I'm like now disenchanted by Black Friday emails and opt out of all of them.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just like all it is a crush of email. You're like, great, I'm just going to get crushed by email for the next 6 weeks. And like, I want to see the offers. Don't get me wrong. I like to see the offers. It's just like, if you're, you know, continuously sending me a not great offer 18 times, this is a whole other subject. And I know we have to get to our interview, but like, don't keep sending me the same email because I did not engage with it the first three times you sent it to me. I told you something by not engaging with it, and that is that I don't like it. You know, like, I think that there's somewhere in there this narrative like, well, if you just keep sending it to the same people who didn't engage, then they're eventually going to engage. I'm like, yeah, by opting out, that's what I'm going to do. That's the engagement you're going to get.
There's another great bounce question in there about how much information you can gather over not engaging, like from your audience that is not engaging.
That's true. And also, how do you define engagement, right? Something that we cannot quantify is eyeballs on subject lines. We do not know our subject line impression rate. And we do know that your brand presence in the inbox, even if there's not email engagement, just living in the inbox is having some effect.
That's so true.
They become used to seeing it and they're not opting out for a reason. Right. And also, we can't really quantify opens in a very accurate way anymore. So that's a whole other thing. And preference centers, they kind of fell out of fashion in recent years. And these seem like a lot of great reasons to resurrect them. Bring them back.
I love a good preference center. I love a good preference center.
Yeah.
Well, should we? I know we have some of these exciting details coming up in today's interview, which I'm super excited about. This is our last interview of the season.
It is, but I have to do a shameless promotion before we get to it. I've got some speaking engagements coming up that I'd like to invite the audience to join me at. Let's see. I've got multiple digital summit appearances coming up. I'll be teaching a 4-hour email marketing strategy workshop, and I will have a 30-minute session as well called the Schitt's Creek Guide to Email That Converts. So I've got some fairly new content to share with everyone. I will be at Digital Summit Philadelphia, Atlanta, Washington, D.C., Los Angeles, and New York City. And you can save $75 with the code SPEAKER75. I'm also going to be at Mauticon, sometimes pronounced Mauticon. Depends on what side of the pond you're on. But it is the summit for users of the Mautic solution. You don't necessarily have to be a user to enjoy the content. And tickets start at $5. It's a name your own price event because it's an open source solution and it's an open source event. And you have full visibility to how much money they're making on this and how much they're paying for it. And it's pretty fascinating. I'm also speaking to the California Association of Realtors. We probably do not have any of those members here, but hey, there you have it. That's my shameless promotion. And now we can get to the interview that everyone is tuned in for.
So go see Jen speak. I'm not speaking anywhere. So
I'll see you all
in a few months when we're back with hopefully our next season. All right, let's get to the interview.
Look at
Yeah, we're matching. Natalie, where's your yellow?
I didn't bring my yellow. I'm always the oddball out.
We all it's have fine. Coffee.
I know. I mean, I live my life as the oddball out. I'll embrace it. All right, are we ready?
Yeah.
Okay. Welcome to Humans of Email, a podcast about the people, ideas, and accidents that drive email forward. I'm Natalie Jackson.
And I'm Jen Capstraw. And today we're interviewing someone who I'd say is taking on a lot of the industry's emotional labor. She's doing a lot of both paid and unpaid work to advance the email community. And Natalie, this guest was your pick. Why was she your choice for our last guest of season one?
So something we've been talking a lot about, Jen, is people who are email famous. And I know we've been talking about email famous swag, which hopefully we can get rolling for season
two. Yeah, we
need
t-shirts.
Hats, t-shirts, stickers, like whatever, email famous. This person is very email famous and one of like the few email famous people I have not yet actually met one-on-one. And so what? I was really excited. Of course, we are talking about Gilda Hilaire. Welcome to the podcast, Gilda.
Oh my God, I'm like blushing here.
We embarrass
you both for having me.
We embarrass everybody when they come to the podcast. You're welcome. Your name is so uncommon. So you're kind of like the Madonna of email. People say Gilda and everyone knows who Gilda is. You only need one name. Like my name is like two names smashed together. Like people call me Jen Capstraw. Like it's one word. And you are Gilda.
And it's funny, growing up, I was like, oh, why did they pick that name for me? Nobody's going to know how to spell it or say it. It wasn't until somebody's like, is it short for Gilda Radner? I'm like, who's Gilda Radner? And they're like, oh, it's this New York comedian. Then I started to embrace my name.
Oh, yeah. She is a legend mm-hmm. and a pioneer for comics and for women.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Yeah. That's when I started embracing Gilda.
And passed very young. Unfortunately.
Mm-hmm, she did.
But you are here with us and healthy and strong.
This took a dark turn. I think Jen's just mad that like every time I was in a class, there were like eight Jens.
I am. I'm still bitter about being Jennifer number three in fourth grade. I am. I wanted to be unique and it made me not feel special.
Okay, but I'm gonna say as someone who has like a moderately less common name, like there are more Natalies now than there ever have been, but perhaps Gilda can appreciate this. What you can never find is at the gas stations when they have like everybody's name on like a keychain or a coffee mug. Like we don't get that. Like you
do.
Yeah,
we don't get that at all.
No, our keychain like row is always empty. It's all sold out.
Good point.
But anyway, Gilda, we first met via Women of Email. I think the first time we had a one-on-one conversation was when I was looking for a local speaker for an event in Boston, mm-hmm. and that was late 2018 or early 2019. I can't remember which, but I know that there was snow. It was cold. I don't like the cold. We also had the opportunity to meet in person at that event. You gave a terrific presentation, and at that time, you were at a brand and you were on the marketing technology product team. And today you're on the product team at Salesforce Marketing Cloud. And you're the host of the Email Geeks Twitter Spaces and tackling some really touchy subjects that we're going to talk about a little bit mm-hmm. later. You were recently a speaker at Unspam Greenville. You're everywhere. I know you've been like really visible in the Salesforce user community for a very long time, but you are now visible to the greater community of email marketers and folks who work at agencies and vendors. Mm-hmm. And you're doing a lot to advocate for people in email. You've made such a splash. And I'm just wondering what motivated you to start positioning yourself as a leader, an industry thought leader? Like that is a conscious decision.
You know, It was a very conscious decision. And early in my career, I was not this vibrant person. You know, I was the one that was behind the screen. I would just go to work and do what I needed to do my little campaigns. You know, I had some managers that would micromanage me and I just kept taking all of this in. I'd go home. I have my, you know, I'm a single mom. And that was my day to day. And then just one day I was like, you know, looking for stuff. And, you know, I would attend conferences looking for people like me. And I couldn't find them. I couldn't find thought leadership pieces. I couldn't find anyone that was motivating me enough to get out of my rut. So I decided, you know, well, if I can't find what I'm looking for, why can't I be what I'm looking for? Right. So I kind of took it upon myself and started seeking out people that I could get feedback from, initial feedback. I did, you know, Rome wasn't built overnight. And the person you guys are talking with today, I definitely wasn't built overnight. I actually had to seek from other email marketers like, hey, I'm Gilda, you don't know me, but here's some things I'm thinking of doing. What do you think? Just to get validation that there was a need in the community. And it was through them and the, you know what, you got this, do this. Yeah, I'll support you. That, you know, I continued on this race of finding gaps and trying to fulfill the gap. I also think the other reason is, like I said earlier, I'm a single mom and I'm raising, you know, this beautiful leader that, you know, I want her to see all the things that mommy's doing so that she can feel the same courage or strength that I'm feeling to continue pushing through whatever adversity it is so that she's not hiding behind the screen or scared to raise her hand or use her voice. And it hasn't been easy at all. I think, you know, we face roadblocks every time we turn, but the way I see it is, you know, you can't be what you can't see. So let's keep on pushing.
That is so true. And I relate a lot to that answer. I didn't see a space for women. And so I was motivated to create one.
Yeah. You know, and I, you know, I remember I worked one place and I spoke about it on Spam, and you know, I was a marketing cloud guru. I was a badass. And you know, I worked at a company where it was just guys. The guys were the developers, the guys were the architects, right? They were the ones that were documenting things, and women, we were just meant to like build the email, send the email. You know, and I had to literally prove to them that I'm just as smart as you. I know about HTML code. I know about the triggers and I know, you know, about CSS. And yeah, I could read, Gilda reads code, right? And I remember, you know, sending them this email around 4 a.m. of something that was broken. And I tried to tell them it was broken. They wouldn't believe me. And that moment when I sent the email, it was just a sense of release. Right? Like once I do this, it's the game on. And I hit the send button with pictures and explaining to them why the code was wrong, why this was wrong. And I remember the next day getting to the office and then bing, I get an instant message. I'm like, oh snap, get my pink slip. And they're like, Gilda, can we see you upstairs? And I went upstairs and they're like, they apologize, you know, for being, you know, an asshole to me. Pretty much, wow. I can say that. But it was enlightening to me, right? They were assholes, right? And from that point on, I said, you know what, Gilda? Nothing's going to happen if you sit behind a screen and not open your mouth.
I love this. And you mentioned your Unspam talk. Yeah. What inspired that? Tell us like what that was, what your topic was. I think you kind of already answered the question. Yeah.
You know, this one's touchy. So what inspired, I struggled with what to speak at on Spam and I was scared, but I decided to dedicate the talk to my friend that passed away. He was well known in the email community. His name is Zach. And when I started my email journey of writing documentation on how to do implementation for Marketing Cloud, he was the first person I reached out to. And he was also, you know, the one that would read the stuff I was writing for LinkedIn before I published it on LinkedIn. And I wish I had was able to save some of our messages on Slack, because that's how we started building our friendship. And he would always encourage me. I've never met him. I don't know him from Adam, right? It was just somebody I was looking in the Slack, Email Geek Slack, and like, who's a guru here? Like, who can I nudge just to help me? And, you know, the talk at Unspam was really about us able to go for what we want, use our voice, be passionate, be dedicated, and collaborate. Because Zach was the first person outside of my comfort zone that I reached out to. And that kind of gave me that oomph I needed in order to start using. You know, sadly, at the start of the year, you know, Zach passed away unexpectedly. And it really crushed me to the core, because I was just with him in December, hanging out, laughing, unstop. And his last message, you know, the last text that I had from Zach was him saying, you know, I don't really like a lot of people, but I really like you, you know. And my Unspam talk was dedicated to him about who we are as marketers and the hunger and the need to keep pushing and keep making the changes that we all are making.
I'm sorry for your loss. I'm like, I'm feeling it. And there were tears in the house. A lot of people loved Zach.
Yeah, they did. And, you know, they were shocked. I remember when I reached out to the admins, I was like, you know, I have some sad news. They were like, no, can't be, because he was just online. They were like, he was literally just online helping people, like, I don't know, early morning, maybe midnight, 1 o'clock. And now they're like, no, Zach passed away this morning. They're like, Gilda, it must be another Zach. We have proof of him helping. I'm like, no, it's the same Zach, trust me. But I think, you know, when these things happen, we have to find the positivity of it, right? And the positivity of it was, here is somebody that would go above and beyond to help and to encourage. So I'm taking that as me continuing to do what I do to impact the community, find gaps, uplift, support, whatever it takes, you know, in the strength that I have, right, is to not let any sort of adversity or negativity stop me from what I'm doing.
It's so important to have those people in your life who validate you, who give you a nudge, who push mm-hmm. you a little bit farther than you think you should go, and like give you the courage to do things. And I've had a few of those people in my life early in my as a college student and early in my career. So
yeah,
Zach, and it can't be wherever you are, man.
Yeah.
Thank you.
No, and it can't be a checkbox. You know, I tell people, like, because I have 8 mentees, right? And I'm like, you have 8 mentees? I'm like, yes. They're like, how do you sleep? I don't. Team no sleep right there. But, you know, for me, I do things because, you know, I don't want it to be a checkbox, because it goes back to whether my daughter, my mentees, you know, we have to find a time to raise the next generation of email marketers, developers, designers, architects. Like, my daughter and her friends and then my nieces, they need to know email marketers, we could be developers, we could be architects, we could be, you know, 15 times certified, we could read code, we could write code, we could do the same thing that the men are doing. Or if we see something we don't like it, say it. You know, don't let, you know, some leaders try to, you know, dismiss your ideas. Speak up, right? I mean, if we don't teach them these things or speak about it and raise the red flags, no one's gonna do that.
Yeah, Jen, remember we talked about this during International Women's Month and the difference between like how you see your career when you have a woman who reaches her hand out to help you versus how you see your career when you have women who want to hold you back or tell you you're not good enough. And like the impact is tremendous, right? Like there's such a growing effect of like, if a woman helps you, like you are more likely to help another woman, and then they are more likely to help another woman. And then, I mean, it's a cumulative effect.
Did anyone along the way say, you can't do that, you shouldn't do that, Gilda, you're making a stink where you shouldn't?
No, you know, and two of my former managers, One, I actually just spoke with her earlier this week, and another one, you know, her and I are like besties. You know, they constantly say, no, I'm proud of you. You know, I see what you're doing on LinkedIn and Twitter, and they're like, you've blown me away that you're making such an impact. Like, no one has pulled me aside and said, girl, we're going to need you to like pull it back. Because I think it's because I don't personally see anything negative out of what I'm doing. I may be doing too much, but I think it's doing too much to make a positive impact versus a negative impact. Plus, I'm not one to beat around the bush either. You know, I say what I say. You like it, you don't like it. You know, that's a you problem, not a me problem. Right. But I also think it's like, I'm not disrespecting like anything or anyone, even, you know, with the Twitter spaces, you know, Jen, that you mentioned earlier. When we have the Twitter spaces, the first thing I say is, we're not bashing anyone. We're not bashing brands. I personally am against saying, oh, this brand is this, that brand is that, right? Because at the end of the day, we're all one community. And in whatever we do and whatever, however way we approach things, let's do it respectfully, right? Because there's somebody that worked behind this campaign. There's somebody that's leading this program. They have feelings, right? We have to respect the work that they're doing or respect the brands and decisions that brands or company makes. I mean, if you have a problem, you could say, but eliminate the brand, eliminate the name of the person, but just be respectful. But no, no one's ever said, stop what you're doing.
I've been told to stop what I'm doing, but I come in like a bulldozer. Have this like very... a thoughtful elegance to the way that you collect your thoughts and share your ideas, and yeah, I don't have that.
But I'm also a bulldog. I would jokingly say, I wish they don't come for me unless I call for you. I'm like, you know, I wish they would tell me to stop. I'm gonna keep going harder.
That's what I do.
Keep going harder. Oh, you don't like this? All right, you're gonna see three times as much as me.
So you mentioned you're a member of the email community. You're also a member now, especially, of a bigger community of marketers, and that is the Salesforce community. Tell us about what you're doing now at Salesforce and also what it was like going from client side to vendor side like that.
You know, when I've always wanted to work at Salesforce, and believe it or not, I was rejected like 5 times, and everyone's like, no way. I'm like, yes way. I saved all the rejection letters because I was doing such an amazing job on the client side. I was their advocates on custom advisory boards. I was this, I was that. But, you know, coming on the Salesforce, there was a need. And because I was a customer and I was looking at emails yesterday from 14 years ago when I started using the platform. So because I was a customer, I came in here not really having a definitive role. And that's something else I always advise people to do is think outside the box, because you get into a company and, you know, they have this blueprint of you're supposed to do all of these 18 bullets, right? And I come in and yes, I had these bullets of responsibilities, but I thought outside the box, and there was a need to fill gaps that was missing in brand advocacy, right? And individual brand advocacy. So when I think of myself as a customer, I wanted a me at Salesforce. I wanted somebody that could say, hey, I'm having this event. Will you be able to, you know, attend? Yes. Will you be able to support me? Yes. Hey, can you help, you know, speak about email builder or this or that? Oh yeah, absolutely. Hey, can you help champion this? Yes, no problem. Like, I wanted somebody at Salesforce that can make me feel that I'm making a difference in the community and in my work, and that can validate what I'm doing. And I didn't want it to be a checkbox. I wanted it to be something that's impactful, and that's something that's needed in the community. And that's exactly what I do. So I lead a lot of Marketing Cloud and Pardot programming and support, and leading a lot of third-party events and doing technical and educational webinars to help educate the, you know, to help educate the community. And I also want to ensure, and Natalie, you use Pardot, I also want to ensure maximum utilization, because a lot of times when the leaders sign these contracts, right, they're not taking a magnifying glass and looking at all the stuff that's available. So I want to make sure, like, for anybody using the Pardot's Marketing Cloud account engagement and, you know, Marketing Cloud, that they're maximizing how they're using it, that they're not just using 40% of it or 60%, but they have an entire viewpoint of all the things that they can do. And the only way to do that is to make sure that there's a me as a community leader ensuring all these things are happening.
You've been listening to Humans of Email, and we'll be right back.
Natalie, you got a 20% click rate on the last email. 20% click rate.
Yes, with my loosely inspired idea from Chris Vasquez.
Yeah, one of the bonus episodes that we ran recently was with Chris Vasquez, the chief product officer over at AWeber. And there's like this hysterical moment where I discover that he is the brains behind the Would You Rather newsletter, which is incredible. And I have used examples of it in my email presentations before at conferences. And I had no idea it was him until like it just came up organically in our conversation. And so you created for that episode your very own Would You Rather question. What was it?
Yeah, it was fun. It was like, what are the two worst choices that like an email marketer could be put into? And so one was like, would you rather be stuck sending to Outlook for the rest of your career or be told to hack the Gmail primary tab in your next email campaign? I can't believe that Outlook won this, Jen. Like, this has got to be the only thing Outlook has ever won.
I would pick Outlook too. And you were able to use AWeber not only to like create those call to action, multiple choice answer buttons and all of that, but you also were able to use AWeber to create the landing pages for when you clicked on one of those options, right?
Right. With, of course, the Schitt's Creek gifts that I know most people probably found funny. Everybody loves a good Schitt's Creek gift.
So right after you sent that, I got an email from AWeber, which we get after every campaign goes out. And it's like, you know, here are your campaign stats. And it shows you like open and click rate. And I kept, and it's, they created that email with AMP for email. So it's always updated in real time.
It's so cool.
Yeah, I kept refreshing, going back and looking at the email. And I'm like, wow, we got a 5% click rate. We got a 10% click rate. We got a 15% click rate. I'm like, what? Beat 20% on the click rate. This is incredible.
Hey, you know, we had to do something about our deliverability woes at the beginning, so we went with engagement.
Anyway, we have had such a delightful time using the AWeber solution as the official email service provider of Humans of Email. And if you're interested in giving it a try, you can do that at aweber.com/humansofemail. Go fill out that form and maybe they'll sponsor season two. That'd be cool,
right? I hope so. I sure hope so. Hopefully we'll see them again next season.
Yeah, and they donated lots of swag for our bounce segment. So it's been fun to send that out to our listeners. And I think we owe a few people some packages. So it's coming. It's coming. We promise.
Yes. Thank you, AWeber. We hope to see you again next season.
Hey gang, Tom here. We'll be getting right back to the show. But first, we want to take a moment to answer some fan mail in our segment we call The Bounce. Hey Jen, hey Nat, we're back again.
Hello.
Howdy, Tommy.
All right, I got a good one this week. Mushang Pierski, which I'm getting better with the pronunciation. I'm telling you, another couple of weeks and I'll be okay. Here she is. This is her question.
Hello, humans of email. I'm your huge fan. Here's my question. Is adding images in the subject line a common email practice nowadays?
That's a good question. So we think that she's referring to emojis, right?
I think there are kind of two ways that I think about images and subject lines. And like one is definitely emojis. The other is that preview that we're starting to see. I know Google kind of launched it first, but we're starting to see it in some other places too, where you can actually like showcase some images in the actual inbox without having to open the email.
Ah, yes. Yes. Gmail annotations. Okay. Yes. I've got big opinions on both of these topics. And you're going to laugh because like I talk about emojis and subject lines so much that I've got an official Jen Capstraw branded short link to refer everybody to. If you want to see a study about the use of emojis in subject lines, then you can go to jen.tips/emoji. It might be emojis. I think it's emoji, singular. jen.tips/emoji. And it's a research paper from my friends at Phrasee, which is one of the technology solutions that I work with. And their analysis of millions upon millions of emails that are using emoji versus not using emoji. And as you can hear, I'm interchanging my my use of the plural form of emoji. Like, is it with an S? Is it without an S? Well, how do you say it, Natalie?
Emojis. It's emojis. Not like an octopus. Like, you know.
I think some people do say emoji like octopi. Anyway, well, I'm getting sidetracked here. Ultimately, what my friends at Phrasee say about emoji or emojis in subject lines is that they don't make a subject line better or worse. They amplify your subject line. So a really great subject line is even better and draws more attention. And a really horrible subject line is even worse and draws attention to how bad it is. So it is widespread. And they can be used very effectively. I love using emojis in subject lines. And then in terms of annotations, I think that they're a very cool idea. Gmail annotations, that you can have that kind of top of the inbox, the promotions tab view on mobile devices using Gmail annotations. And they're greatly underutilized because it requires a lot of technical expertise. And it is kind of like the email Illuminati deciding whether or not it appears or doesn't appear. Like you really don't know if it's going to work. There is a solution called Peek Inbox that makes it really easy to create Gmail annotations. And if you go to jen.tips/annotations, yes, I have a short link for that as well. It'll take you right to the homepage for Peek Inbox, and you can just play around with the tool for free. And there's a lot of information on how to implement Gmail annotations. So check that out. I think because it's underutilized, it probably is an area of opportunity if you are B2C and you've got a big Gmail audience and you've got you know, a relatively high volume of mail flowing through Gmail. Odds are good that your annotations are going to pop up and give you a little differentiation from the rest of the pack.
I don't have any short links, but I agree with that Phrasee research. I know that's a very scientific opinion that I have there. I agree. I concur. I have no statistics to fall back on that, but from my user experience, I do agree. Like if you have like a like an emoji that you're like, oh, this would be perfect. Like I think I just saw one on Twitter where somebody was like sharing that there was like a mushroom recipe and somebody like pulled the mushroom emoji in. I'm like, yeah, all right, that works. Sometimes you see like people go wild with the emojis and it's like a whole subject line of emojis. It's maybe a little excessive. It's kind of like it's like telling a joke, right? Like the first time you tell the joke, it's funny. But if you keep telling it again and again and again, it loses its luster. So like there's an element of like timing there and there's an element of like repeatability. Like have good timing with your emojis and also like don't repeat the joke. That might be like some good ways to think about it. I will say when I was at Influence, we tested the Gmail annotations for our conference that we had and like did like, you know, a conference discount code and like had all of those annotations and like it worked really well. It was really fun. I only say that because it's not like it's out of the woods for you to use it for B2B, but I think you're right. Like you definitely want to make sure that you have a good understanding of the inbox providers. Question that I would have is like, if you were using the G Suite for your, like your business email, like would it function there? I haven't seen anyone test that. I honestly don't know.
I do not have promotions tabs set up on my business Gmail accounts intentionally. So I am not sure. I just have it set up for my personal, which I know that makes me a complete weirdo.
Right. But I mean, could it be worth a test? No harm in testing is what I like to say.
Especially considering how easy Peak Inbox makes it to create the annotations. So definitely worth checking out.
All right. Thanks again, ladies, for your expertise this week. If you have a question for Jen and Natalie and would like to be featured on The Bounce, all you have to do is go to anchor.fm/humans of email and click on the message button. Please make sure to give us your contact info in the form so that we can have a way to get you a swag bag from AWeber and Humans of Email. Thanks so much, and we'll see you again next time on The Bounce.
I have to say, as somebody who's now on the client side, I love that because so Pardot's like my maybe fifth or sixth marketing automation platform. And one of the things that we're doing right now at CBiz is a lot of us are getting Pardot certified. Even though a lot of us have been using Pardot for years, I always feel like getting certified, finding those communities is the key to maximizing what it is that, you know, that you're using. And there are already like little nuanced features that we're discovering just going through the certification process that like we just didn't know about. And like, before we started recording, I wanted to say too, I'm coming out of the Microsoft Dynamics space, and I've been in the Microsoft Dynamics community for 10 plus years. And so coming to Salesforce when I joined CBiz back in August was like, wow, okay, this is totally different. And it's really different for me because that Dynamics community is so IT focused, it's so dev focused, and Salesforce is like, marketers, welcome, like come in, be a part of the marketing community, like learn how to use this as a marketer. The events are so marketing friendly. There's so much marketing content. I feel it, and I feel like so much passion and love, and I know that that comes from people like you and from you directly. I think what I'd love to know is like, is that purposeful? Like, is Salesforce doing this on purpose?
You know, they are, and the joke I always tell my manager is like, listen, I've been working at Salesforce for 3 years. I was a customer before that, the longest, so I'll always have 99% customer on me and 1%. And the reason I maintain it like this is because when we do a lot of these programmings, I'm still putting the hat of, does this make sense for a customer? If I'm a customer, what level of documentation do I need? What about the certification? Is this programming right? Is this programming wrong? And I feel like you have to do that to make sure like the right materials coming out, the right content, the right videos, the right thought leadership pieces. So that way, you know, it's not too salesy, or we're not hitting that home run. We're completely of left field or right field. So it is done purposely, right? And the community is the community. It's by the community, right? There's so many programs and events happening and content coming out of the community because they want to educate, you know, on best practices and tips and tricks. Here are the things you didn't know and the things you do know. And this is what I love about the communities, because the community goes hard to teach each other and to make sure that they're sharing this wealth of knowledge with each other.
I have, obviously I'm a member of the Email Geek Slack, but I always know if I hit a hard question, I can go ask the Kardashians and they will answer it for me.
The Kardashians,
yes, they will. And one thing I do love about is like, it is just what you hit, you know, you hit the nail on, is you have a question, somebody out there has an answer. There is a group. Not only that, it goes beyond just, you know, in Slack, here's an answer. It also goes with people saying, let's set up a call. I'll walk you right through it. Let's do a video. Here, call me. Right. And I'm like, whoa, right? Because 14 years ago, I was on an island by myself building campaigns for Johnson & Johnson. I didn't have that. I was trying to figure out a WYSIWYG tool. right? And trying to, like, you know, banging my head because, you know, this table and this WYSIWYG tool wasn't, you know, rendering the information correctly. But now you log in and you could go to the Pardashians, you can go to Email Geeks, you know, Salesforce has all these communities. Somebody has an answer. And that's something that we cannot take for granted, because when we all started, this wasn't in existence at all.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, as a client, on the client side, I tremendously appreciate the support. And yeah. I think, like, Salesforce understands something that I think some other CRM communities don't, which is that, like, the marketer often gets left out of the CRM conversation, despite the fact that literally our entire strategy is founded upon what's happening in a CRM system. And so I think that that's huge to help marketers understand, like, what does the campaign's function do? Mm-hmm. Like, how does this all work in tandem? What is the right way to set things up? So we have to be, I feel like as email marketers and digital marketers, we have to be so much more technical than we had to be 5-10 years ago. So it's nice to have a community to help you learn those technical nuances.
Oh God, yeah. And you know, I like that too, because I feel like we're all growing in that area of being more technical than we were, because I think back then there are a lot of, like I said, I was using WYSIWYG and insert table and like trying to figure out why the table's not rendering. Now it's like, especially for women, now we have to learn how to, you know, we have to put that developer and that architect hat on, and we're the same wavelength and as the men. And I think years ago it was like, oh no, women, you all just hit that send button, let the guys handle the scripting and the coding of it and all the API calls. No, and now it's like, no, the women are teaching the men how to do the API calls and the triggers and the scripting. Yes, I speak code, right?
Right, right. And like, and SQL, like we have and to learn SQL. Like, right, like we have to learn SQL too. And it's like, right. Is that a lookup field? How does that relate to right. This object?
Right. And the more you get into like, whoa, this is really cool. You're like, you know, this is the hat I want to wear. I want to write the SQL code. You know, I don't want to sit there and design, you know, just sit there and design emails. And then you have a lot of people, more of us, like just diving into data architect and the data science of the campaigns, which puts you in a whole, you know, different level. Right, because programmatically the data schema of the campaigns is just a whole nother beast to understand. But you have a lot more people saying, you know what, I'm going to pause on this email operations and I'm going to dabble into data, because a lot of companies struggle with that. And it's like, I want to wear that data hat now. I just love the direction of where email is heading.
Yeah, and I feel the same way. And if you would have told me 15 years ago, working on my Master of Fine Arts in Creative Writing, that I'd be talking about SQL, I would have been like, no, that is not for me. I'm curious to know, this is a question we like to ask a lot of our guests, what is it that brought you into email in the first place? What were you doing before email? And how did you get to a point where we're talking about SQL?
You know, a lot of people don't know, I was actually building web pages. I worked at Johnson & Johnson, and I was working on like shoulder pain websites, knee pain solution. There's another website, but I was the master of websites. I was building web pages. I was working with agencies and on the creative artwork and the framework and the blueprinting. And I was the one going in, building the sites, reviewing the sites, getting the sites approved, launching the websites. I mean, I was at the time, maybe I was managing about 8 different websites for Johnson & Johnson for their the Pew Orthopedics division. And I remember J&J signed with the Olympics campaign, and I was like, oh, okay, we just launched the site. I'm like, what else can we do? And I told the agency, can you just send me the raw files? And they sent me the raw files, and I was like, we have to be able to do more with these raw files. So I started doing print work. I started doing postcards so that we could send it out to patients and invite them to some of the upcoming Olympic events we were having. And then somebody said, oh, well, you could probably use this thing. It's like ExactTarget. I don't know what it is, but we know that Farmers using it and some of the others are using it to send emails. I'm like, oh, can I get access? And they gave me access, and the rest is history. So whenever the agencies would build the files for the sites, I would take the files and I would use Photoshop and I would use Dreamweaver and InDesign and others, and I would build my emails and what was then ExactTarget email solutions platform. And the rest was history. And I just, from that point on, it was building emails, implementation of Marketing Cloud. I've worked at some of the largest agencies doing, customers, client side. And I worked at one agency partner. And it's been a fabulous journey. I don't want to go back.
You're probably like closest to email as like an origin story as we may have heard. I feel like everybody else was like, and then email got thrown on my plate. You were like, no way. Yeah. I think I want to be in this email thing.
Yeah. Literally, it went from web to doing like design work and doing like postcards. But it all started working with doing Olympic campaigns. And I remember the campaigns I built for the Olympic trials, which I got to go to, which was amazing, was actually selected by the International Olympic Committee for others from Tylenol and Zyrtex and some of the other brands to copy because they liked the design and the layout and the use of the Olympic logo and the look and feel. I'm like, my little email campaign? Okay. Because all campaigns have to get approved by the IOC before it goes out to any of their customers. So that was like a game changer for me. I'm like, oh, they like it. Oh, let's do this email thing, right? But again, I was going against all email rules. I don't think rules even existed 14, 15 years ago. I was just doing my own thing. But here we are today. And always ExactTarget. That's the thing. Like a lot of people like, I'm always ExactTarget. My entire email career has been ExactTarget. I did work at one company that had 7 ESPs. So I do know like Marketo and like all of them. Yes Mail and Silver Pop. I know every single one of them. But my entire career has always been ET/ Marketing Cloud.
Did you ever do that you'd slice up a Photoshop file? And then it would generate the HTML code. And then you could like swap out the embedded text for some live text.
Oh my God. Everything. Not only that, I was obsessed with fonts. So I always begged my manager to get Fontfolio, which had like how many thousands of fonts in there. I'm like, oh my God, this is a Christmas gift. I could pick which fonts I want for my design. I was so excited. I have a USB that has like my old Macromedia, like Fontfolio Studios. Scary. So scary, but fun.
So we talked a little bit about like your interest in taking time to nurture other email marketers. And you actually have something that like, I don't even know if I knew it existed until I saw you doing it. And that's Twitter Spaces.
Yes. You know, where that came from is, again, I live on the edge of just try it. And the idea really came from just exhaustion of having to like put my face on. Like I gotta do my face, gotta do my hair, gotta join this call. So the idea really came from that. And you know, a lot of people say, and I have to do a Twitter space, I have to put one on together, but the idea really came from wanting to find ways to unite the community in the least restrictive ways possible, right? When we have the Twitter space, a lot of times I tell people, listen, I have my bonnet on. I may be drinking a Irish coffee, and that's okay because it's Twitter space and the call's not being recorded. We're amongst friends and family, not enemies, and we're having a conversation. And I love it because it's a community coming together, sharing, and really speaking on topics that matter. It doesn't matter if you're using HubSpot or Marketo or other platforms. All that matters is these topics impact all of us. Salary, right? Burnt out, code, platforms, You know, they're all these topics impact every single email community member. So I started doing the Twitter space because it was just a need. And I didn't just out of the whim start it, right? I remember I reached out to a couple, like to some of the admins from the Email Geeks Slack channel. I was like, hey, here's what I want to do. What do you guys think? Because the other thing, I consider myself very respectful. And I did that because I didn't want them to think I'm taking people away from the email Slack. It was to complement the Email Geeks Slack channel, right? And it's to complement the Email Geeks community. And even some of the folks from Women of Email was like, hey, I'm thinking of doing this. What do you guys think? Right, because we're one, at the end of the day, we're all one community. There shouldn't be any divisions between us. So I did the Twitter space just to fill a need so that we can have conversations of things that really matter. And, you know, and it's been fun. I like doing them. It's just been really busy on Fridays, but we'll be back.
And for folks who are not familiar with Email Geeks Slack, it's a community you can join at email.geeks.chat. Just fill out the application. They'll approve you. There's no cost to participate in this community. I think it's over 14,000 people at this point, and it's an amazing community. I want to back up. I have a question about a particular Twitter space episode, but before we get there, I'm not sure that everyone actually understands what is a Twitter space and how you join and what the format is for participating in that.
So a Twitter space is audio only. And what that means is literally no one's seeing you. You're just listening. It's almost like you're eavesdropping on a conversation that a group is having at a table next door at a restaurant. Right. And you can activate it from your phone or you can activate it from your desktop. But what it is, it's about 10 people speaking and about any sort of topic. And, you know, if you follow me on Twitter, I'm Jess Gilda. When the Twitter space starts, you'll see it at the very top panel. You'll see my name. And I don't think it flashes anymore, but you'll see my name at the top. You just click on it and boop, you can join and you can listen in. You can also raise your hand, and if you want to weigh in on whatever topic is happening, you could just request to speak, and then you could just get added to the panel, and then you could just share what you want. But the calls can be recorded. My Twitter spaces are not recorded, and I purposely say at the beginning of the call is not to be recorded by anyone, right? Because I want to respect the conversation. I want to respect the speakers and what they have to say, and I don't want anyone taking something out of context. So, but some of the sessions, not mine, they're recorded and then you can play back the recording. It's not a chat, so you're not chatting. It's really just audio only, which I love. You don't have to get all dolled up. It's not presentation style. So I really like the fact that we have this other medium that we could use.
And you tackle subjects that are really timely and relevant. Like I'll see people talking about something and then a week later there's a Twitter space, which is awesome because everyone's like, oh yeah, we were just talking about that. I got things to say. Yeah. Like let's address this topic. And you're not afraid of difficult conversations. And I love that about you. Like you, it takes courage to say, we're going to talk about something controversial. There was one episode I participated in that comes to mind. And it was called, What is an Email Geek? Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering what inspired that conversation and what your ultimate takeaways were from that.
I'm on Twitter a lot. I'm on the Twitter. I'm on, you know, the Women of Email. I'm in Email Geeks. I'm everywhere. And a lot of times these topics, like what is an email, geek or email marketer, really stem from me seeing other people ask that question and the responses, right? And for me, when I see that, I'm like, oh, okay, I think this warrants more of a conversation to hear feedback from others on what their take is. And a lot of people, something like, well, what is this? What's a table versus what's an image versus HTML? And everybody has an opinion about some. So why not bring it to the table? Why not get the gloves out, right? And let's duke it out. The duke is all fun and stuff. But, you know, I always want to hear what others have to say on some of these topics, like what is an email marketer and what's the meaning of it? And then, oh, I think that one, Jen, is email. Is email something you would go to school and learn? Or is email something that you could learn on your own, right? And what I love about these is that it's both, right? I can, if I want, I can, you know, go to not email school, but there are courses that will help people understand fundamentally what an email marketer is, right? What is the concept of email marketing? And I always tell people before they learn Marketing Cloud or Pardot or any ESP, learn the fundamentals of email, right? Before you build or touch, learn the basics, deliverability, and learn about the data and learn about blueprinting. And then, but some of the HTML and the coding, a lot of that stuff, you know, we could learn, right? Am I an email marketer? Absolutely. Am I a badass email marketer? You got that right. But coming out of these Twitter spaces, I feel for a lot of people, it's like a breath of fresh air, like, oh my God, that's exactly what I was thinking, right? Oh my God, it's so good to hear somebody else's thoughts and opinions on this subject. And you walk away like, okay, this is just what I needed to hear on a Friday afternoon, no stress, no pressure, you know, platform, whatever, session, if you want to call that.
And you're so much more than an email marketer. Well, we all are. And that's something like we really like to highlight on our show, like who are the humans in this industry when they're not working? Who are you outside of the email space? What are your personal passions and fun facts? And something that I've heard you say a few times is that folks are really surprised by your taste in music. Tell us about
that. Oh my God. You know, people... Well, I'm from the Caribbean, so a lot of people, I guess, they assume, you know, she only likes this type of music. But then I'm like, oh my God, are you kidding me? I'm like a soft rock chick, right? Like, you know, I like old school music. So Bananarama, right? I'm like a Bananarama, Aha, Fleetwood Mac, Guns N' Roses, Coldplay, you know, my favorite. And I think this shocked a lot of people. I was like, I was obsessed with Green Day. They're like, what? I'm like, Dookie was like playing nonstop my radio, right? It's like, and people are like, Gilda, you're lying. I'm like, listen, my daughter can tell you she got sick of hearing that song because, you know, I just love a good hard rock and soft rock music. Like that is me. I'm cleaning the house, I'm playing my hard rock. You know, Green Day is on, Coldplay is it's playing.
I have a Green Day story for you. You reminded me of a great memory. I was at a music festival in Central Park a few years back, and there were multiple genres of music featured, lots of different artists. It was this day-long event. And on the sitting next to me was a family, mom, dad, and son, who was probably about 12 years old. And this kid sat stoically for hours and hours and hours, just quietly and politely watching all the performers until Green Day came on. And this kid jumped up on his feet and danced like nobody was watching. He knew every word to every lyric. It was the most beautiful thing I think I've ever seen in my life. He just waited all day to see them. It was magnificent. And I felt like I was eavesdropping on this really exciting personal moment that this kid will never forget. It was amazing. So I would imagine you would have been right there jamming with
right
him.
Right there, Coldplay, Imagine Dragons, like I'm
Imagine
there.
Dragons too.
Yes, like obsessed. I used to, when I used to run, I don't run anymore, but I used to run about 7 miles, between 5 to 7 miles, and that was my running music for the hour and a half, depending on how long I decided to run, is that the soundtrack was like Green Day, Pink. But you know, a lot of these music, like that's, you know, that's my jam, you know. And I think a lot of people are surprised that I run. Like I used to be an avid runner. I used to do 125 to 150 miles a month. I would just get up, you know, before I'd bring my daughter to school, after, I would run for about an hour and a half. I would do about 7 miles, maybe about 35 miles a week.
Oof.
To 40 miles a week.
And that is really impressive.
And then old age and torn cartilage, we don't run anymore.
Oh.
So what do you do instead to free your fill time? Fill your free time. There we go.
I row. I row now. I started COVID when I tore my cartilage, and the orthopedic doctor was like, I'm just going to have to pause on running. Because I'm not a jogger. A lot of people are like, you could jog, you could walk. I'm like, you don't know me. Once I start jogging, the jogging turns to running, and then that's it. It's a wrap. So I row now. I bought a water rower, and I row. Again, I'm obsessed. Like, be a little obsessive with things. So I row 3,000 strokes. So I do between seven to ten miles.
Are you on a body of water or like on a rowing machine?
It's a rowing machine at home, and I'll burn about 1,000 to 1,300 calories.
What?
Wow. That makes me want to get a rowing machine.
3 to 4 times a week. Yeah, I love it. I absolutely love it.
Do you, I have a similar tendency to like get obsessive about like fitness routines, right? Like it really resonates with me what you're saying about like I can't just jog. Like I have to run.
I have to run, right? I have to.
Do you see yourself you know, like getting out into the river anytime, trying that?
I would love to. We'll see this year. Depends, but I would love to. I love it. I need to. It's my me time. I have so much going on that rowing allows me to rewatch old school episodes of Survivor because I'm a big Survivor fan. I know people don't know that I'm obsessed with Survivor. Not that I would want to be on the show eating like bugs and raw food, but I like the people that are physically doing it. Yeah, I'll cheer them on. But when I row, I watch old episodes of Survivor. Like, oh, I could be on there. I'm like, no, I can't be there. Just continue rowing your ass.
It's amazing. We need like a email version of Survivor.
Could you imagine? I would be the first one out.
Oh no, Gilda!
I think we're gonna challenges.
We're gonna blend this coconut juice with the worms and the octopus. I'm out.
While trying to code for Outlook or something, it would be
while
like,
trying
can
to
you
code.
This?
I'm out. Would you rather code or drink this? I'm out. I take the coding for Outlook with my eyes closed for 100, please. I'm out.
I'm no so competitive, way. Man. I would eat all the bugs.
What? See, Jen's winning that prize money. I'm out. First episode, blended snails. I'm out. Get me to that taco bar and the martini bar. That's where you'll find me cheering you on.
I auditioned for Road Rules and Real World back in the 90s.
Shut your face.
Wow. Yeah. I did not know that.
They're back on Paramount.
Oh, really?
Yes, they are. They're
should I apply?
It's all the old Road Rules. They're bringing them back to discuss the controversies that they had. Oh, you have to watch it.
Okay. All right.
Mm-hmm.
So you're a woman of color, and when I'm out at email events and marketing events, it is really hard not to notice that there are very few Black marketers at these events. Do you think that's because there are too few Black individuals in the industry, or is it because marketers of color have disproportionate access to these industry events?
I'd say both. And, you know, I've always struggled with that. Even when I remember attending my first connections, like the exact target marketing conference. I didn't see any of me. And that same year, I got a chance to go to Dreamforce, and I met this one person, Dana and her and I are friends now.
And Dana in Atlanta?
No, it's another Dana.
Okay.
I've heard of a Dana in Atlanta. This Dana's in South Carolina.
Okay. Carry on, sorry.
We latched on to each other at Dreamforce. She's like, are you black? I'm like, are you black? I'm like, yes. She's like, oh my God, I never thought I'd meet another black person at Dreamforce. And we kind of latched on to each other the entire conference. And I still see that as an issue now, even when you are an email geek, Slack channel, woman of email, LinkedIn, you know, Twitter, you don't see a lot of me out there. And I that's one of the reasons why I make myself visible for the world to see and hear my story, because I'm trying to find more me's, and it's really difficult. It's really difficult. And I don't know why that is. I don't know if it's because they're scared to come out like I was years ago, to come out and say, hey, I'm an email marketer. Oh my God, so nice to meet you. You know what I used to do? I used to go on LinkedIn and I used to search hashtag email marketing, email geeks, email this. That's how I was able to find a couple of people. And as scary as it may sound, one person, her name's Lakeisha, I'm going to call her out. Hey, Lakeisha. I message her on LinkedIn and say, hey, I'm Gilda. I'm from Salesforce. I'm not trying to sell you anything. I just want to introduce myself. You know, I just want to, you know a little bit more about you. And a lot of times I take that risk just to find more of me, not to sell, but to build a relationship, a connection. And the other thing I do is I'm a brand advocate for that person. I'm like, hey, let me be your Olivia Pope, right? You want me? You know, a lot of times we work for these brands, and sometimes the brand is like, oh, I don't want you using my name, you know, for your benefits. Like, yeah, well, we're not using your name. For example, Natalie Jackson, that's her brand. Jen Capsule, that's her brand. So if I work with them as individuals, I'm not promoting whether you work at Target or this brand. I'm promoting them as an individual. So a lot of times I try to seek out the me's on LinkedIn and Twitter and wherever I can, just to have a conversation with them. But you'll find a lot of them are saying the same thing, like, I didn't know you existed. Or some of them are like, you're Gilda? I'm afraid to reach out to you. I'm like, why? Do I have a booger on my face? I don't have a do not disturb sign, right? But that's one of the reasons I applaud you guys, you know, for bringing me on the show and, you know, diversifying the show, because you find that there are a lot of us out there, and they're not seeing the me's out there. Therefore, they're not thinking that I could be the next Gilda, or I could be the next Jen, I could be the next Natalie. But it is a systematic problem that we have, and I struggle with how do we solve for it.
And that was my next question. Like, whose job is it to solve for this? If it is systemic, who can fix this? Who can attract more Black people to our industry and give them the courage to seek leadership roles as they advance in their career, to become visible thought leaders as they advance in their career?
I think it's the us. Like, it literally is, you know, the more of, I'm just going to use me an example, but the more of me that I see, the more I want to be her. How can I be her on that stage, right? If there's a talk happening, let's encourage others to attend. And like I said, let's encourage networking to happen, right? And what that means, if we see, especially, let's take the woman of email. If we see somebody of color there, I kind of want to say, hey, I'm Gilda. How are you? You know, let's build a friendship, right? Because I want to know, what are your interests? I actually met somebody from the woman of email. I reached out to her. And her and I stay in touch, but that's the only way we're going to have to do it. It's not to take away from the woman of email geeks, but we have an issue that we have to figure out. How do we start raising up some of the women of color that are afraid to speak up, and it's not even afraid to speak up. Sometimes it's you don't have the courage to speak up. And it just takes that one person to say, I believe in you. You got this. Let's do it. right? I want you on stage. And that's what I do now at Salesforce, is I help a lot of trailblazers who are like, oh, I don't think I can do it. I'm like, why not? Well, it's just not me. Who said so? Who said it's not you? You can absolutely do it. I want you to do it. So I'm going to put you in this position to either present or to record a session. And if you look at some of the stuff we do on social media, a lot of it's me. I want your face on there. You're going to be the Olivia Pope. You're going to this, you're going to do that. But I have to do it to diversify and to show others that your face could be up there. You could be on that stage. So yeah. It's us. We have to do it.
Yeah. I love that perspective. Yeah. And yeah, it's, it's like a long-term fix, but it's, you know.
Yeah, but you know, I also don't believe in like having a set aside group, right? I believe we have to come together to fix it and invite everybody to the community, right? Like sometimes for me, like when we start dividing into smaller group, it scares me because the division is the problem that we might have when we start dividing into you're in this group, you're in that group. I'm like, why can't we all be in the same group? Why do we have to divide, right? In order for us to fix the issue, we have to come together to fix it. Dividing into smaller groups is the reason we have a problem today.
Well, you can have both, right? Like everyone deserves a safe space. So, and everyone deserves to have that. Community of people who are like them, and also you deserve a seat at the table and being a part of the bigger conversation.
But I think my problem, we all deserve a safe space. I just want to make sure when we do have the safe space that we don't forget about the safe spaces, right? And I feel like sometimes that tends to happen where we have all these safe spaces and people forget about the safe spaces. Like, and that's why, like yesterday, I tweeted the thing about, you know, I'm still seeing at conferences, it's the same people, right? And it's like, diversify your speakers, right? And that is when I feel like sometimes people forget about the safe spaces to reach out to them, right? If you want to diversify your speakers and you don't have, let's say, a Black friend, you have somebody that knows, that has a Black friend that could go to that safe space and say, hey, my friend, you know, is looking to diversify. Would anybody be of interest? Anybody's interested. So I'm okay with the safe space as long as a community, we don't forget about the safe spaces and exclude. The exclusion is what really gets to me. And I feel like it's the exclusion that may be causing this issue of not seeing a lot of women of color on stage and presenting and blogs and in the top 10 list or the top 20 list, right? And I see that a lot. And every time I see that, it burns me to the core because I'm like, there's some amazing marketers out there. We just have to find them.
And put them on stage and get them visibility and like make that intentional effort to say you belong here as much as anyone.
Yeah. Like I was going to, where was I going? To Indiana. And I was like, hey, I'm going to Indiana. I'd love to meet some folks there. And somebody saw the post on Women of Email. She's like, oh, I know three women that lives in Indiana, Gilda, that would love to meet you. Boom. Done. I now have a relationship with three women of color I did not know in Indiana because I went there and somebody was like, Gilda's going to be there. This is who she is. She's down to earth. She's cool. You guys need to meet with her. Met with them. Boom. That's how we have to do it.
Well, any women of color who are listening and have an interest in public speaking, I am always looking for speakers for the Women of Email Speakers Bureau. All you have to do is go to womenofemail.org, fill out the application, indicate that you're a person from a marginalized group. And then there's like a place where you can drop in a bio. If you just describe like what you're passionate about, that means that when I'm looking for a speaker, you're in my database. And I am always sorting on people from marginalized groups and trying to give them you know, a little extra advantage wherever I can extend that courtesy.
The Woman of Email does a really good job, though, at promoting that, right? I see you guys do it, you know, on the Facebook, on Twitter, like you guys are reaching out, but then it's like, hello, where is the Woman of Color? So we just have to figure out, you know, where they at. And if it means going on LinkedIn and searching, like I said, that's what I started doing, hashtag email marketing, just to see. And then I would send out messages and reach out to people.
And there is so much to be said, right? Like I really appreciate what you said, Gilda, like just in general, and people are like, oh, I don't think I have anything to say. I'm like, yes, you do. Everybody has something to say.
We all have something to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's the thing I remember. That's the first thing I said to Zach was, I don't think anybody's going to listen. I don't really have anything to say. And I remember, and I wish I had these Slack messages. And for him, it was like, everybody has something to say. I don't know. He's like, I don't know you, but I know you have a lot to say.
Absolutely. So let's talk about some good examples. Do you have any email brands or any brands that are doing email that you're crushing on that you're like, wow, that's amazing. Like, what a great strategy.
I'm biased. I'd say Starbucks, but why? Because I, you know, I'm a coffee addict. Everybody knows I'm a coffee addict, and I like getting my, you know, hey, the Red Cup season's coming in, and you know, it ties nicely with all their social media campaigns, and just the wow, you know, you just earned 60 points. I'm like, oh, this is timely, or just letting me know this new drink is coming out, you know, and you know, not a lot of people like it, but I think it's because I think with a lot for me is I'm emotionally connected to a lot of the brands, right? So like my Marriott, I'm a Marriott chick. Don't get me in any other hotel. I'm a Marriott chick. So, you know, I like my Marriott, getting my Marriott emails reminding me of, you know, any specials that they're having, or of my points, and just getting the emails up. My trip is coming up. Do I want to check in now? And here's some of the things I need to keep in mind on my upcoming trip. And this is the weather. And if I need to check in early, you know, I think for me, it boils down to personalization. So the brands that I like are the ones that, you know, I use the most. And so I'm a little biased. I'm sorry. I'm a Marriott and Starbucks chick.
Don't be sorry.
Those gamification emails make me do things that I otherwise wouldn't do. Like Starbucks is like, oh, your stars are expiring soon unless you go buy another coffee. And I'm like, right. I have to buy a coffee.
You're like dashing to Starbucks like immediately.
I know. Right? And I like, it makes me so mad because like I know that they're like tricking my brain chemistry, but like I also can't stop myself.
I can't stop. Or when they have the games, like, yes. You know, that's the worst. I love it, but it's the worst because you're like, dadgone it, if I bought one more drink, then I could land that extra star so that I could get unlimited drinks for 6 months. I'm going back to Starbucks today. I'm getting a drink.
It's like the email equivalent of like the, you know, those little like cranes that like reach in and grab the stuffed animals, and it's like you always almost get it, but you don't get it. It's the email equivalent of that.
Literally, I drive and you're like, oh, I'm almost okay. One more drink, and that'll be it. I'm gonna order this one drink today, and then I'm gonna nail this extra star. Do you get it? Absolutely not. I'm like, does anybody ever win this stupid thing?
No, no one ever gets the video game cranes either. No one gets the stuffed animals.
That sounds frustrating.
It is, you know, but these brands make it frustrating. You know, but sometimes for me, it's like the highlight of my day because I think we're all so busy. So whatever little thing, you know, I find that I can do to bring in some sort of laughter or joy, to take me away from my day to day. Because I think for all of us, we're sitting in front of our computer probably from like 7 a.m. to like 10, 11 p.m. 5 days a week, maybe on the weekends. Like I worked on Mother's Day while my daughter was at work. I worked. So for me, it's like if I'm going to play the little game on Starbucks, it's, you know, the Wordle or whatever, to take away from the stress of the day to day, that God, I'm going to do it.
What would you say is a common email mistake or a widespread misconception in the industry that you wish marketers would correct?
Every time you hear a CMO or a VP say email is easy, we all need to correct that shit right away. Because it's sad because that they still think email, our role, what we do, it's, I don't know, I might get dinged for this, that it's still undervalued. I don't think a lot of organizations realize the amount of work and the hats that an email marketer puts on just for that campaign to go out the door. It's not easy. It's not, you know, insert boom, what magic happened, right? The email doesn't mysteriously look this good. It takes a lot of hours for me to strategize, design, build, test, send. I have to look at the data. I have to look at the analytics. I have to report. I have to understand. There are a lot of mechanics that happen. I cringe when I hear people say it's easy, and I feel like it's up to us in to represent the ecosystem of the email community when we're in these meetings, and they're like, oh, it's easy. You can just, no, there's no I can just. It just doesn't happen, right? And I think it may not be an email mistake, but I think it's an email terminology mistake that, you know, we have to stop a lot of people from saying email is not easy. Email should be valued and put on the same level as you would for the IT team or the legal team, right? And the other thing is, you know, email marketers should be looped in at the very beginning of any strategy, not at the tail end, not in the middle. It shouldn't be an afterthought. Email and social should be at the very beginning of whatever new program or new thing you're doing. And I think organizations might purposely put email in the middle at the end because they think it's easy. Oh, they have templates. It's easy. They could just, you know, change the code, this code thingy, or change the copy and voila, hit the send. Voila doesn't happen overnight, buddy. We have to use our vocals, and we have to put an end to this whole notion that email is easy and email is an afterthought.
So, we talked a little
bit about Natalie's like, yes.
Oh my gosh. Yes, absolutely. I think until you do email, like, you don't realize like the asks that you're making sometimes, like, hey, can you tweak X, Y, and Z? And it's like, I don't know, how well do you know code? I'm not a coder. I know enough to be like dangerous, but sometimes I feel like I feel questions where I'm like, I don't, that's out of my code knowledge base.
Right. Like, can't you just swap the image? Yes, yeah, but the fact that it's a dynamic email, no, I just can't swap it like that. You know, I have to, you know, we have to go to the data. We have to understand the data and the metrics and the whys. I'm not just going to do it just because you're asking me to do it. And, you know, in working for the when I worked at the client side, several times people would try to pull a fast one on my team and I interjected, nope, we're not doing that.
I mean, like even fonts, like right to your point about like just understanding how it works. Like sometimes you'll get people who will say, well, how come your font looks different from mine? And can we change the font to font XYZ? And I'm like, well, no, because it's a series of fallbacks and I don't know what you have on your machine. So.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. But like, or people don't know.
Email is easy. Can't you just build the campaign today and send it out tomorrow? Absolutely not. Nope. Can't do it. And even as email marketers, we have to look at the copy and we have to look at the imagery. Does it make sense? And the buttons and the CTA and understand the metrics behind the campaigns and the strategy. And, you know, people in organizations, I think, take email marketers for granted. And it's a notion. We have to stop that immediately. Email is not easy. It's tough to be in our position. And I can't wait for the day to happen where CMOs, CTOs, CFOs, CEOs, all the C's in the world understand the intricacies that exist in our world.
Well, we have run way, way, way over our allotted time. So we got to tie this up in a bow, but if folks wanted to follow what you're doing, Gilda, where can they do that? You mentioned your Twitter, @justgilda. Where else at should Jeff we be Gilda. Looking for you?
You know, I'm on LinkedIn, Gilda Hilaire. You can find me on Instagram. Nothing happening, but I'm just Gilda as well. On Instagram, you know, I try to be consistent with all of my names, but you know, for most of the time it's just Gilda, and then on LinkedIn it's Gilda Hilaire.
That's great. Well, and thank you.
Oh, Facebook.
Oh, Women of Email too. Well, thank you so much, Gilda. Definitely was a pleasure to finally actually meet you one-on-one, and I've really, really enjoyed this. So thanks so much for coming in. For those of you who are listening, you can always get more information and find more of our show notes by subscribing to our email list at humansofemail.com. You can also send us emails at howdy@humansofemail.com if you have good feedback, bad feedback, questions, comments, all of the above. And don't forget to send us your questions for The Bounce, especially as we get ready for next season. We'd love to hear what you have to ask us. We're still waiting for some really bizarre, juicy questions. I mean, ask anything, right, Jen?
Anything.
And you can find that at Humans of Email over on anchor.fm/humansofemail. Press that click the message to record button, and we'll send you some swag from Humans of Email and of our friends at Aweber.
Well, this was awesome. You guys are awesome and amazing. Thank you both for having me today.
You've been listening to Humans of Email, a podcast about the people, ideas, and accidents that drive email forward. An Idea Empire production. Copyright 2022.